Blog Talk Radio.
Well, they sound hungry. Did you know these men here were cannibals once? They may still be cannibals. You shouldn't worry about it, though. We're not a very appetizing lot.
Presenting an epic voyage into the unknown.
Conquest of the Earth mostly means the taking it away from those with different skin tones. Not a pretty thing when you look into it too deeply.
Based on Joseph Conrad's timeless classic.
We've been facing a very grave situation here, Captain Marlowe. It's a matter of relieving stations.
Tim Roth, star of Reservoir Dogs.
There's only one reason you haven't got your goods, monsieur. But the carriage, the ivory, has no captain. Well, now I'm here. You shall have your ivory.
And John Malkovich, star of In the Line of Fire.
Happiness is to be found only in victory. In commerce, as well as war.
In a film from director Nicholas Rogue. He was sent to recover a fortune.
Find out just exactly what this man Curse is up to.
What he found was a mystery without explanation.
You are interfering with me. You and your peddling notions.
Without reason.
You understand what I'm saying? My boat's sunk.
And without mercy. Turner Pictures Worldwide presents Heart of Darkness.
It's too dangerous to go in there.
Too dangerous indeed. Welcome to In Our Craft or Sullen Art. I'm your host, Richard Weissman, and we are being brought to you on Late Night Poets, which is the largest group on allpoetry.com. And I am going to bring my co-host, Laurent, on.
Good evening.
Hey, Laurent, thanks so much. So good to have you back.
Hey, a pleasure to be back. I hope your drum's going to be all right.
Yeah. So she's under the weather. Intermediate term, she needed to take a break and focus on her health. But, you know, the show must go on. Yeah, the show must go on.
Right.
And I'm really glad you could pick it up. Okay, I believe we've got Pam on hold. Let me bring her on. Is that Pam?
It is, yes. Hello, Richard. Hello, Lauren. Good to hear you both.
Thanks so much for joining us,
Pam.
On the air.
Absolutely. Looks like a great lineup of poetry tonight.
Absolutely. So tonight's intro, I kind of was, I had real difficulty finding something short. There is tons of stuff about Joseph Conrad, but his work is so intense and so relevant, even more than well over 100 years later, that it's very hard to find something pithy. And what I was reduced to was a promo for a film adaptation of his classic Heart of Darkness. But I do think that it kind of set the tone for tonight. Just briefly, did you have a chance to hear it, Pam?
You know, and I have to say, I think intense is a perfect way to describe Joseph Conrad's work, although I will admit he's another author that I actually have to read more. But I did start to listen to The Heart of Darkness on YouTube, but got distracted by other things. But I will say with the half hour or so that I did listen to, definitely intense. Sounds like a movie I should watch. And, man, I kind of wish you could have found something shorter, but I totally get it because sometimes you go out there and you're like, nope, that won't work. But at least I think that gives us kind of a taste because, you know, while there are some differences, there's still going to be some flavor of the literature in the movie. So I think that gives people kind of a taste of, as you said, the intensity of his work. So, very cool.
Yeah, and I will say I've seen the movie, and they did a great adaptation of the, I guess it's a novella. It's too short to be calling it a novel. And they really did it justice, I felt. Great actors, great director, great script. And Laurent, did you have a chance to hear the intro?
Yes, I did, and it really aroused my interest. Tell me, when did this film come out?
So I think it was in, like, the 90s. And, you know, and Hollywood with adaptations of films, they can be hit or miss, but I do think that they did an admirable job of adapting it.
Well, that's good. I'm going to have to hunt the movie up because it's a hell of a novella.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it holds up all these years later. It's, you know, it's something that you pick up and you're like, damn, this could have been written, you know, a year ago, and it's still just as relevant. I think that it's talking about human nature and greed and what people will go to in order to abate their desire for power and material gain. It's a cautionary tale, I believe. That's how I interpret Heart of Darkness, and just a genius of a writer. So, okay, big lineup. So without further hesitation, I will turn the mic over to you. Laurent, where would you like to begin?
Well, you've got some carryovers, but before that, you've got a piece by Joe Braz called Transparently Speaking. So I thought we'd start with that and then move into the carryovers.
That sounds great. Yep.
Is that what you? Okay. Let me get it up. And I guess, Richard, you're going to be the first one to read.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So this is by Joe Braz. It's called Transparently Speaking. An acrylic box's innards on display but locked away. They're exposed, all told, with bold reflection, indented or sent in, seen or heard at both, not hidden away, that way no one can bruise, a loser of losing when the lock of the box broken off in soft caresses of a lock's tick-tick. If the seal break, what was not spake, now said, but the tread wheel of furry beast, turn, turn, feast, lease of that piece of lost lakefront doesn't give a whistle to some wicked willow, yellow jacket thistle, lined up on beach's polished glass, seekers kiss the ass of the last sandbar as it meets. Cold air from murky clouds of weeds, watercress touch the ringed surface, quarry creature's eyes fixed bob without blinking as the fog and salt stick through in them. Sun bobs in time with the crayfish's eyes, no need to go under the mud, the light from the sun does it for them. Break slow, break fast, broken breakfast beach, sand each, rain solitary. Ask the mosquito, after it lands, balloons bright red, let it go, not SWAT tells you. End of poem. And
nice
Laurent,
job.
I will... Thanks so much.
Pleasure to hear you read again. Pleasure to hear you read again. All right.
Thanks so much. So I'll give you first word.
No problem. Yeah, well, there's a lot of very interesting wordplay in this that I enjoyed a great deal. But the prompt, A Nightmare of My Choice, was well handled, I thought. And there's something about the poem that really drew me into a second reading. Quarry creature's eyes fix Bob without blinking as the fog and salt stick through in them. sun bobs in time with the crayfish's eyes. No need to go under the mud. The light from the sun does it for them. There's imagery in this piece that is almost otherworldly. Its tempo in places is rap-like, which I do enjoy. And it's a very strange nightmare vision that I enjoy.
I think we lost you. Hold on. Let's see what's going on.
I could hear Lawrence.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, yes, I can hear you. I think it's Richard that's having the problem. I will tell him that in his own voice.
Sam, do you know if he's still there?
I don't know. I don't have the studio open, but I'll check.
Right. Well, we're gonna wait. We're gonna wait a moment for him to call back in. But in the meantime, why don't you give us your ideas?
Sure, absolutely. I like that you mentioned the nightmarish quality of this particular rite. And while I think it's subtle, it's definitely there. And all right. So I love the rhyme and flow in this and the imagery, which is definitely intriguing and thought-provoking. And I have to say that to me, it really seemed to focus on the nightmares within nature. You know, it gave thought to me of the idea that nature, while can be beautiful, can also be something ugly and scary. Quarry creatures' mm-hmm. eyes bob without blinking as the fog and salt stick through in them. Sun bobs in time with the crayfish's eyes. No need to go under the mud light from the sun. Does it go for them? Break slow, break fast. Broken breakfast beach. Each sand, each grain solitary, ask the mosquito after it lands, balloons, bright red. And I think also there's a metaphorical angle to it in the idea that the bloodlust of the animals and especially the mosquito is a representation of the bloodlust of humanity. So amazing write and very well done.
Nice conclusion is drawn, Pam. Thank you. And Richard, you're back.
I am back. Yeah, the funny thing was, suddenly I couldn't hear you, Laurent. And I said, Laurent, I can't hear you. And then I realized, you know, suddenly I was dropped. So I called back. But, live radio, what can you do, right? Just keep rolling.
Hey.
Okay. So, but yeah, great comment, Pam. And I, too, really love this piece and a great take on the chosen prompt. It was written, I should be loyal to the nightmare by choice. And I love what Joe did with the stunning metaphors, vivid imagery throughout this nightmarish landscape. Just very strong writing, very well done. And amazing kind of lyrical tonality. You know, the funny thing is, when I first read them before the show, I do read them aloud, but it's different when you're reading them aloud on the air and, you know, you're trying to really be pitch perfect. And the lyricism really was front and center when I was reading it. So amazing work by Joe. Nice way to start the show. Okay, Laurent,
yes,
I know we had some carryovers.
Yeah. We're going to have the first. There's one by To Forget Me by Poems of Rain, but that's been deleted, so I'm going to go with Life as He Knows It by Blue Wright. And Pam, this one's for you.
All right. Life as He Knows It by Blue Wright 76. Cold water, lathery soap, shirt and pant from the rope, as another pair found its place, yesterday's roti, watery tea with sunshine anew, at doorstep, prayers hastily emptied pockets, both that filled his family's pots, a rickshaw peddler's morning became walks to the reverend's stand, chases street urchins and dogs, that found sleep on his dear couch. Time to clean his middle-aged asset, yellow and red with a dash of orange, rusty spots rickety with paint redone, and salute his gods on his new start. He can't resist sweet smiles at his idol's torn picture, picks up little children, his friends with endless chatter. Thousand questions through the years, hands and legs peeping out of safety, he chides them alert and stern. Energy of the morn propels his limbs, sweat on the pedals and sandaled feet, worn-out leather like the derma between. With years, his friends got bigger. Some passed on to motor automobiles. Few tots replaced them, yet his pedal didn't falter with seasons. Odd customers of every day, loaded or light, cross or abusive or cheerful, spice of the day into his sphere invade. What way they connect he never knew, as each left a mark on his friendly eyes. Yet his pockets filled the chore to be done, days to navigate, life duty to family became yellow and breathless under the sun. Physical woes to upend on frictions, the roadside pond or cigar did entice him. An excuse after toughest of days or hours, when the pedals agitate or the limbs hurt, when rain came calling at his doors, life's hail days to go through intact, face the ire of abuse from lost people contagious, and yet stand stoic and immovable. Finally, the way home at night, solace that dear another's arms who toils her own, entwines with his rough hands to raise testy brats in their likeness, yet lovelier and stronger than their simple math, reasons to smile again. When limbs and feet burn, his chardia a tad brady denies them their calls with sleep and dreams under leaky roofs behind broken windows. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Yeah, and that was to the Thomas Wolfe quote, man is born to live, to suffer, and to die. And what befalls him is a tragic lot. There is no denying this in the final end, but we must deny it all along the way. And I love how Blue Right 76 answers the prompts with these portraits. And this one was no exception. The rickshaw man provides a strong extended metaphor for life sufferings. I thought it was a well-woven poem, nice storytelling, right? Very nicely done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I really enjoyed the piece. And I echo what you had to say about it. The stanza that I landed on that I thought best answered the prompt was the one that begins, yellow and breathless under the sun, physical woes do upend on frictions, the roadside pan or cigar did entice him, an excuse after toughest of days or hours. The lines, lives half days to go through intact, face the ire of abuse from lost people, contagious, and yet stand stoic and immovable. I like the use of the word contagious from the lost people, because a contagion can spread in an unpleasant way. And that fits perfectly in this particular stanza, in this particular poem. I thought that the poem was a testament to his inner vision, and it was aimed squarely at the prompt. Very nice.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, this is wonderful. Great storytelling type poem. Wonderful imagery. I really like how it speaks on a man who works hard all day, goes home, you know, still has struggles at home with raising a family, but also has love in his life. Like the fact, I like the stanza that speaks on the children that often come to him with questions and their endless chatter, because oftentimes children will open up and be warm to people that other people will sneer upon or reject. I thought that was really nice. Just really nice right all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments. Okay. And which one would you like to do now, Laurent?
Well, we have one by Swimmer7, and I'll give that a quick read. Called You Can't Go Home Again. A town called Apache, a town like the others where people dug coal mines and drank with their brothers. Hard labor and whiskey and constant arrival led by the railroads and desperate survival. Having no tender or seat in my jeans, black nugget mining is coffee, beans. You went dancing Friday, because that's what you do. A week's worth of magic in 1 hour or two. Tracing her hips through the thread of her dress. She moved like sparrow leaving its nest. Outwardly weary from internal violence, we talked to the stars and listened to silence. End poem.
Great read. Wonderful job there. I love this one. Outwardly weary from internal violence, we talked to the stars and listened to silence. And internal violence is a wonderful description of the discursive thought process. I thought it was a well-woven storytelling that was brought home in lyrical verse. And Laurent, you did an amazing job with bringing that lyricism to the radio. Nicely crafted throughout. Very nicely done. And Pam, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a great write. And I kind of repeat myself when it comes to Swimmer7. I always say great rhyme and flow because he is just an amazing rhyming poet. And the imagery is just spot on as far as, you know, as I see the description of a poor mining town where that's the main work that people do. And I really like this all the way through, especially like, having no tender or seed in my jeans, black nugget mining means coffee and beans. You went dancing Friday because that's what you do, a week worth of magic in one or two, tracing her hips through the threads of dress. And I'll stop there, but I could honestly keep going. But I like that because it reminds us that within the ugliness of this life, there's dancing and there's sensuality and music. And the taste of hot coffee, you know, getting those simple things that get you through the trials of life working in the coal mine. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word on this one.
Thank you. I have to agree absolutely with Pam. Except the coffee and beans, black nugget mining does not pay much. So either four or beans, coffee's a must-have. And that Friday dancing, getting that week's worth of magic crammed into an hour or two is not a lot of time. And I don't think it's a good time. I think it's more of a release. When the poet says outwardly weary from internal violence, there's an implication there of the life that actually exists that is often internalized that nobody can ever see, but within the parameters of the mining community, it is not necessarily a happy place. And there is a lot of psychological and physical violence, I am sure, because, you know, black lung disease is no fun. So I thought it gives a real good look at that kind of town.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a arduous and harrowing life that they led back in the day.
I mean, if you left, would you even want to return home? Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, I think we had one more carryover, right?
No, we're done with the carryovers.
Great.
But,
okay, where would you like to go?
Yeah. Well, we're going to do Emily Dickinson. Excuse me. Emily Dickinson, Alone and Dreaming. And, Richard, it's your turn to read.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So this is Emily Dickinson called Alone and Dreaming. A gift not possible to contemplate that day when we discovered we could have no children from the union of our genes. But from that devastation, we would find redemption. What you're to us, a gift. Alone in orphanage, surviving with a dream. Now you are joined with us, for I, we are bone of bone and flesh of flesh, though we share not one chromosome. We have chosen you to bond with us alone. God who fostered you before the world began and breathed life into your fetal lungs and brought you forth into the world with screams from you and from the mother who had scant resources to raise up her gift from God. End of poem. And Pam,
nice,
if we can start
Richard.
With you. Thanks so much. Pam, if we can start with you, what'd you think?
Oh, this is wonderful. I thought it was beautiful and heartfelt. I really like the rictometer style that he does, which I think has a nice polished look because you can have it in one stanza or more, and it just, you know, like I said, polished look. I love how this speaks on the blessings of adoption and getting a child of the heart through adoption, which, you know, is important for so many people who can't or choose not to have biological children. And I made my comment to Daniel, and he said, thank you so much, Pam. And just so you know, this is not about my own personal experience, but that of some others I've known along the way. And I told him that I said that he wrote it with such heart that I wasn't sure. And it did, to me, it didn't change once I knew that it wasn't his personal experience, but him writing on behalf of others. And I said, you know, I've known people who have had the same experience. You know, I've known people who struggled to have children and then ended up adopting, and it was such a blessing to them. And I think Daniel did a wonderful job of capturing that. So just beautiful and very well done.
Absolutely. Great, great comment. Yeah, and I too was very much touched by this poem. What'd you think, Laurent?
Well, let me see. This is a faith-based poem. It's spiritual. And it seems to fly in the face. I mean, contrary to the prompt itself, because there is proof within that there are hearts to keep us from loneliness if only they can be found. When the poet says, for we are bone of bone and flesh of flesh, but we share not one chromosome, for we have chosen you to bond with us, alone from God who fostered you. This is heartfelt in many ways, but it's also a plain statement of their belief that if they can adopt a child, a parentless child, they will, because it is a gift to somebody who can't have their own. And that is a beautiful thing in and of itself. I wish more people did it. Very well done. It's a beautiful, beautifully written piece, but it definitely flies contrary to the prompt.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was very, very surprised where Daniel went with this prompt. We live as we dream alone. Because he did. He st- stood it on its head. And he tends to write very spiritual, inspirational poems. And this was certainly no exception. It was very touching and heartwarming. And, you know, it actually moved me so that I didn't even notice the rictometer and the shape poem of it until, even though it's really obvious, until the second read tonight. So it's one of the advantages of doing shows like this is we get a second read and we can kind of see a little bit more depth into what the poet is offering. And I like that you got the backstory, Pam, because I too thought this was a personal story. And that's the beauty of writing, is that we get to live other lives besides and tell other stories besides our own. So nice job there, Daniel. Appreciate it. And Laurent, I'm turning it back to you for our next one.
This next one is for Pam, a Spectrum VA.
All right. Oops, sorry. Oh, I thought you were going to say something.
No.
Okay. The Horror by Spectrum DN. Et tu, Anton, et tu? Look what solemn art has done to you. Let's go, Marlowe, into the heart of darkness once more in search of Kurtz in our human nature's inferno. Between Styx and Phlegethon lies Lethe, so calm and forgetful if you play it easy. Gouge your eyes out if you want to see dense, dark, and empty sockets. Here are avarice lens. A soul with no entrails soon will go mad at this ponderous gate of pillage and plunder. Here carnal bodies do fine, rigor mortis, perchance. Did you know the entire lot of ivory now is mine? Heads on stakes with faces towards the houses, watch the high noon noose between vaulterine spirals. They guard murky bends and unknown waterways as Congo's contorted mangroves creep deeper each day and murmurs to itself well within earshot. Apparitions, bony clanks of many more midnights. The white of their eyeballs glistens, the blood moon in dance macabre, jangle of keyless foot chains. I drew back my foot until only by a knee jerk of fate, from the abyss of fever dreams and steaming pits of hell, Capella and Wells too heard the guttural cries, like a rosebud whisper in the aftertaste of slow death. The horror, these last words were not his fiancée's name. Sometimes you have to lie a little to spare her from terror. Anton R. Killian, Spectrum DN, end poem.
Nicely done there, Pam. And wow, what a ride from Spectrum DN. I felt like this was an epic tour de force through Conrad's Heart of Darkness, chock full of textual references, as well as pop cultural echoes of the text through modern history, including Apocalypse Now, what else was there? There was one other one. Hold on one second. Wells, right? Orson Welles. And I thought it a wonderful tribute to Conrad. He does so much in a relatively short poem. Very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I thought that he paid homage to the original in this write. And he drew from it the references and imagery in his own style that makes this particular poem a very vivid and powerful read. I thought he did well You guys did a great job covering the other comments that I was going to make, but I'll leave it at that. Excellent piece.
No, that was a great comment. Lots of insight there. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, I really liked his references in here, like mythological references like Styx and Lethe, you know, the rivers, and then the use, the word phrase, the phrasing of his words and the wordplay and how the imagery is so powerful. And like you guys said, it's really a great tribute to the author's style. And, you know, just an amazing write on the brutal ugliness of death by violence. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And, Laurent, I'm turning it back to you.
All right. I'm going to read a piece by Scott Sharp called Madness. Climbing cliffs. Gnarled fingers grasp, cling, where hope grows in the cracks, chiseled behemoths, nature's stone statues, grim as a million suns, shaded by a million eclipses, smolder in darkness, hiding a million silhouetted introspections, lapping off the heads of dreams, wind-driven seeds, weeds embedded in the rock faces, rising into a cloudless sky, staggeringly sober. End poem.
Great read there. Excellent. And Pam, if we can start comments with you, what'd you think?
Yes, that was a wonderful read there, Lauren. Scott always writes just brilliant brevity, really takes advantage of making sure every word is strong. And, you know, I like that the one-word title that says so much. And, it, you know, it made me think also of the idea of the life that comes forth from stone to create the divide, and almost like it's a representation of a division within self. I particularly like hiding a million silhouetted introspections, lopping off the heads of dreams, wind-driven seeds, weeds embedded in the rock faces. Great lines all the way through and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. I, too, really like this piece. I don't know that I've read a lot of brevity from Scott, but, boy, he really knows how to do it. He conveyed the gut-wrenching reality of madness using Conrad's own metaphor of darkness, and all in very, very few words. So he really made every word count. An excellent write. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word on the piece.
Yeah, thank you. Hiding a million silhouetted introspections, lopping off the heads of dreams, wind-driven seeds, weeds embedded in the rock faces, rising into a cloudless sky, staggeringly sober. Seldom does a brevity exhibit both power and a certain world weariness in the act of spiraling into a kind of madness. I thought this was an outstanding piece. He accomplishes so much in such a short space of time. The image of somebody climbing cliffs, digging your fingers into the cracks in the rock, is crystal clear in my mind. I mean, we see enough of it in movies and rock climbing videos, etc. But to call them chiseled behemoths, nature's stone statue, was, I thought, really excellent. Because, you know, they are behemoths, absolutely. And they are nature's stone statues. Well done.
Absolutely. Great comments. So with that, we are ready for our next one.
Now, we have one by Eric Svensson. Normally has a SoundCloud, but in this case, I don't think he has one. Is that correct?
Oh, he does. I thought I updated it, but I do have a SoundCloud, and it has been loaded.
All right.
I'm not, I might not have updated my notes. I thought I did, but it was a, kind of a busy, hectic afternoon for me work-wise. So.
All right, so I'm going to post it, and you'll take care of starting it?
I do have it. Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay,
I see it, and here we go.
Slip of karma, chameleon's ballistic tongue. DNA'd by Danish and Dutch heritage. I wouldn't trade my broken heart-shaped continent for the world. Black is black, and I'll always want this heart of darkness back. Slip of karma, chameleon's ballistic tongue. Callous cradle of mankind, Africa, not for the faint-hearted. Through vexed centuries concave, cloned stickmen have hurt your bones. Foppish foreign tongues disrupted, ransacked your wealthy nest. Weighted albatross weariness endured, while quaffed colonials procured, venerated soil pillaged, plundered, pilfered, sacred rites ritually smashed apart. Upon your bleeding breast, vehement designs of foppish foreign flags flew. Slip of karma, chameleon's ballistic tongue quips, ad-lips quietly while sentient satellite eyes swivel. When nuclear clouds smother vanquished Europe, the cockroaches will return. Scarab, scurry, scurry, harried, harry, scamper back to hide in Africa's dung bowl, heart of darkness. That ruddy rascal Rudyard again. If you can keep your head when all about you, DNA'd by Danish Dutch heritage, born and bred in South Africa. Black is black, and I'll always want this heart of darkness back. Quips charming chameleon's ballistic tongue slip. Heads or tails between the legs. Info.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Eric. Wow. Very powerful. Okay, Laurent, I'm giving you first word on this one.
Yeah. Weighted albatross, weariness endured. Well, coiffured colonials procured, venerated soil pillaged, plundered, pilfered, sacred rites ritually smashed apart upon your bleeding breast. Vehement designs of foppish foreign flags flew. This poem by Eric is a powerful blend of his own particular inner vision, and it's combined with inspiration from the heart of darkness. And he's pulling from recent history the extension of socio-political trends that had their place and their genesis in Conrad's book. I thought it was great imagery, and his style of reading is, as ever, very appreciated. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Yeah, I too really love this piece. This is one of my favorites by Eric. I felt like it had all of the notes. It hit all of the notes regarding the prompt, regarding Conrad's Heart of Darkness, and simultaneously he interwove his personal history, how it all related to his journey on this planet, born and bred in South Africa, DNA'd by Danish Dutch heritage, born and bred in South Africa. And in some ways, it was a confessional rite. And I loved how skillfully he interwove that personal history, Heart of Darkness, and contemporary geopolitical trends fallout into the poem. And I felt the lamentations, he embraced truth of life and found acceptance, peace, and spirituality despite our collective burden, our collective Heart of Darkness. And just a great piece. And Pam, I'm going to give you final word on this one.
Yeah, this has beautiful and brilliant imagery and metaphors. I really like how he pays tribute to the heart of Africa, which is home to him, you know, and how he comes from a different heritage, and yet Africa, because he was born and raised there, is the home of his heart and of his spirit. And I like how he reminds us that it is a land that has been taken over and over again, and because of that, there has been a change in the cultural landscape many times of that continent. And, you know, and like you said, I mean, he really fits the prompt well, but at the same time, he weaves in his own personal story and what this land means to him. And I really like it all the way through. But especially Slip of Karma Chameleon's ballistic tongue quips, ad-libs quietly while sentient satellite eyes swivel. When nuclear clouds smother vanquished Europe, the cockroaches will return. Scarabs, scurry, scurry. You know, the whole idea of changing times. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Are you on mute, Richard?
So my audio kicked out, but I hear you guys again. So great comment there, Pam. Much appreciated. Okay, Laurence, I'm turning it back to you for our next piece.
Next one's to you, Richard, by Swimmer 7.
Okay. So this is another Swimmer 7. It's called Wilderness. I met her in the winter, in a bar upon the hill, when the dark was carved by starlight and the moon had paid the bill. I stepped in from the wilderness, from the howling wind and rain. I was weary from my journeys round other people's pain. You are bearded, broad, and ugly, said the prairie girl in fright. Not one from moralizing, we shared our bones that night. I told her of my story, from the famine ships I came, from a world of madness, hunger, where I killed men to my shame. Corruption took our homelands, our humanity, and our dead. I hated a world that prized our lives in the currency of bread. I left her at the drawing as a coyote fought the moon. One night was our forever, she'd be over me by noon. My journey is a lonesome one thrown far by a devil's hurl. So I bellow out two fires for the prairie and the girl and a poem.
Nice.
Okay.
Read, my friend.
Thanks so much. Yeah, the lyrical ones are quite fun. Pam, if we could start with you, what'd you think?
Yes, you know what? I do have to agree that when somebody has a good lyrical poem, it makes our job as readers so much easier. But of course, you always do a wonderful read, but it certainly helps. Another brilliant write by Swimmer 7, you know, with the storytelling, the imagery, the rhyme. I like how, you know, there's kind of that bit of, you know, it kind of makes me think of a John Wayne movie, you know, where at first they don't get along and then they end up kissing. You are bearded, broad, and ugly, said the prairie girl in fright. Not one for moralizing. We shared our bones that night. Of course, I don't think John Wayne ever went quite that far, but it, you know what I mean. It was kind of indicated. But, you know, I really like how this speaks on two people who spend those touching, sensual moments together because it's the only beautiful thing they can find in a time of hatred and war. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Excellent comment there, Pam. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, but I'd just like to comment briefly on what Pam said, which is extremely nice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, regardless of the kind of turmoil that is going on in the world that may affect people, there's always time for human moments. And this is one such. You know, I didn't think there was one line of this poem that was out of place. I thought each one rewarded the reader. It's wonderful writing and tempo with phrasing that lays poised on the page. It's ready to paint pictures in our heads in a kind of melancholy that sits in our bellies. It's touched me deeply, I've got to say.
Great comment. Yeah, me as well. You know, and I, the second time round, it kind of hit me. There's a backstory. I told her of my story from the famine ships I came from a world of madness, hunger, where I killed men to my shame. So this sounds like the character that's telling the story, our narrator, is actually probably, and I might be reading it wrong, but probably an Irish immigrant coming over during the Great Famine, the Great Potato Blight. The lyricism, too, was just spectacular. And I highlighted this line, "You were bearded, broad, and ugly," to the prairie girl in fright. Not one for moralizing. We shared our bones that night. And just a beautiful piece. And like I said in the beginning, you know, that lyricism just makes it so apropos for what we do here on the air, you know, reciting these poems aloud. And just a very skillful, well-told, and lyrical poem. Nicely done. Okay, with that, I am turning it over to you, Laurent, for our next one.
All right, Pam's up next, and I'm putting one up by Jenny the Deep, Pam.
All right. "The Horrors of My Pet Cemetery" by Jenny the Deep. The horror is real as splashes of fur reappear, echoing in a distant memory, an unfortunate, gruesome reality. Wishing it to be an exaggerated nightmare. Trapped in a long vacuuming tube, sucked up, scared, alone and still alive. At home without me, you met your demise. Stagnant on the carpeted floor, we found you. The agony doesn't end there. A confused, traumatized little girl just lost her hamster to a mechanical monster. She finally sees how life is unfair. Twisted, turbulent, troublesome traits, because the new her until the end, as her mom buries their furry friend, she secretly digs him up from his grave. 1, 2, 3 time, more than 4, I'm sure, until the little girl was caught by her mom. Disgusted, dismayed, the hamster got tossed. Oh, the horror is real, for I'm that little girl. Decades later, I still picture him in my arms. How my tiny friend met his morbid end. New apartment, new furry four-legged pet, determined to keep my dog away from harm." End poem.
Nice read there, Pam. Excellent. Yeah, you know, I thought this was a great confessional poem. The death of a first pet is often a child's introduction to the reality of impermanence and the sorrow of loss and grieving. And I thought that Jenny did a really nice job of taking us back in time and bringing it back to life. And very nicely done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, I thought that that first encounter with disposable pets and then the awakening of death's realities to a child is a serious note in this deceptively light piece. It's much more meaningful than it might appear at first glance. Thought it was an exceptional poem. Well done.
Absolutely. And for those that aren't following along and able to see Jenny's AN, this was prompt 7. We live in the flicker. May it last as long as the old earth keeps rolling, but darkness was here yesterday. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Well, as always, you know, Jenny does an emotive dark write. And I like that this focuses on a darkness that is a reality. You know, like pets are oftentimes like family. And oftentimes, as you were saying, there are our first experiences with death and grief. And it can be quite traumatizing. And I can see from and understand both perspectives, you know, the perspective of the child, but also the perspective of the mother who getting frustrated with the child who keeps digging up this these dead pets. And it actually makes me think of when I was a kid, we had a hamster that I was petting, and I had some food on my finger, and of course it nibbled a little too hard, bit my finger, and I bled, and I yelled at it. And then we just happened to that night, we had a wood barrel stove, and the chimney got blocked, so that there was smoke coming into the house, like a whole bunch of smoke. So, of course, we didn't have time to get the hamster, which ended up dying. And I remember as a child crying because I felt for some reason that my hamster was being punished by God or some other natural forces for biting me. And I felt so guilty, but, you know, so I obviously I haven't been through experiences traumatic as, you know, Jenny's, but you do relate to this when you've had a pet and you've had that pet pass away. So wonderful, right? And very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Okay, Laurent, where would you like to go next?
I think, you are next up, if I'm not correct, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm going to find your piece, and I'm going to put it up. There you go. Yeah. All right, Richard, when you see it, you can give it a read.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, so, yeah, I wrote to the quote, but his soul was mad, being alone in the wilderness. It had looked within itself, and by heavens, I tell you, it had gone mad. And so the poem is called Mad Soul. Gnawing on strings of fatty organ meats, my razor nails claw up old drywall of our dilapidated Topanga rooming house, falling, flopping, then rising on its off-white carpeted floor, gnashing teeth till gums bloodied, empty, hungry, calling to lost soldiers of forgotten battles to fill this mad soul with roaring 20s syncopated jazz rhythms as French champagne corks pop, bubbling into frosted glasses while fawning paparazzi camera bulbs white crisp, a stale perfume stink habits my tonguing of your moist undercarriage heat till inner warmth bursts into strawberry bankruptcy. Flowering light swallows the dank, cluttered hallway, the and sunsets while you promise the blindfolded angel everything, anything, lest the fangs and claws of this desolate wilderness rise north in circular rings of sickly yellow diesel flames which consume your night-blinded frontal lobes. Meanwhile, untouched by gnawing, insatiable kerosene madness, the timeless clear light witness breathes full. Equanimity blossoms, clean, clear, till monkey mind limply quells. Now watch as old smooth stone drops into core of crystal mirror-like wisdom lake. Internal hands again grasp hold onto that green glow of the atomic clock's gray hands. Old madness resurrects as black smoke of our dead realm again circles full round and a poem.
Are you on mute, Lawrence?
You better believe it. Richard, that was a fine read. Pam, could you please start us off?
Absolutely, yes. A wonderful read. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. I really like your take on the prompt and how the main thought I get of this, right, is a man falling apart in a world of champagne and music. So, like, there's all this partying and joyfulness kind of going on around him. But at the same time, there's also this ugliness that he sees, the dank, cluttered hallways and sunsets while you promise the blindfolded angel everything, anything, lest the fangs and claws of this desolate wilderness rise north. And meanwhile, untouched by gnawing, insatiable, kerosene madness, the timeless clear light witness breathes full, equanimity blossoms, clean, clear, till monkey mind limply quells. I like monkey mind limply quells because it makes me think of the dancing monkey with the accordion player and how we kind of are all each in a dancing monkey in our own way. But, you know, how if you dance too long to somebody else's tune, you eventually start limping. I also really like Core of Crystal Mirror Lake Wisdom or Mirror Like Wisdom Lake, that idea of looking inward and trying to see something clearly, but really just having a difficult time doing so. Brilliant write and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Thank you, Pam. Well, Richard, there's a strong sense of madness that lies in your words. The imagery is crafted, I think, from the understanding of human depths. We all live lives with a variety of issues, some serious, some not, and some can really put us through the ringer. And I know that in your life you have had a number of issues like this, extremes that you've had to deal with. And it's that understanding of what happens when you kind of hit rock bottom that makes this so special. I also saw a sense of love aborted or thwarted in this rite. Your line, while you promise the blindfolded angel everything, anything. I mean, it speaks as a compendium of misery and insanity revisited as black smoke of our dead realm again circles full round. Richard, I thought this is an epic rite.
Thanks so much.
And do you want to say anything about your poem?
Yeah, you know, I tried to show that madness is not a continuous, unending consciousness. Instead, that it's this kind of recycling where, you know, you have this kind of inner turmoil. And then there's like a break where that higher witness consciousness can rest and you have equanimity. And then the real tragedy is that it comes back, you know, something disturbs that clear lake of wisdom. Someone drops a stone in and gets it all started again. And that's the real tragedy of madness, is that, you know, you think you're through with it. You think you're out the other end. And the wrong circumstances trigger it right back. And that's why it ends with, again, circles full round. So it was a fun exercise to go into the heart of madness. And with that, I am turning it over to you, Laurent. Where would you like to go next?
Well, let me just say one thing about what you just finished with. You know, there's a song by a singer I really like, and he basically, if I can paraphrase him, he basically says that madness that you spoke about, you know, and you think we've got it handled and we don't, and it's not a battle to win, is it? It's more like a dance, an eternal dance, and it moves from the dark to the light and back again. And somehow we have to learn to exist with that fragile battle. The next poem is going to be read by Pam, and I'll put your piece up, Pam.
All right. This is Dead is Dead. Nancy Harrigan was a no-nonsense woman who had just finished mopping her kitchen floor, so when her grandson Timothy came stomping into the house declaring loudly that he was a hunter of ghosts and zombies, she gave him a firm slap on the behind for tracking mud and chided him for such foolishness. Dead is dead, she said. Ain't nobody coming back from the grave. Now go clean yourself up, boy, then come get your chores done, or I'll have your grandpa give you a licking with a willow stick. The boy hurried to do what he was told. Nancy's mother, Leona, sat in an old wooden rocking chair, shaking her head with disapproval. Nancy's amber eyes flashed fiercely. There ain't nothing wrong with taking a switch to a boy to teach him some manners. I never said there was, Leona replied. But daughter, I have told you before and I will tell you again. The spirit realm does exist and so does the afterlife. And someday you are going to run into something you don't understand. And if you ain't careful, you're going to find yourself surrounded by flames dancing to a devil's tune. Growing up in a household with a Creole mother who practiced hoodoo and an Irish Catholic father given her more than her fair share of exposure to religion. As the oldest daughter in a family of nine, she had quickly developed a nobody's fool, take no prisoners attitude of practicality. Even her husband William she had chosen from all her suitors because he was hardworking and had himself a fine herd of hogs and a few acres of land with rich, fertile soil. Mother, you can believe what you want, but I don't have time to have my head up in the clouds full of idols and harps. The world can be a rough place, and I plan on making sure that boy grows up with a boatload of common sense. Besides, if you disapprove of the way I run my house, maybe you ought to get one of your other four living children to take care of you, Thaddeus the priest, or Sissy, who's always jet that womanizing rich husband of hers. Leona had a look of shame and sadness, and Nancy immediately regretted speaking as if her mother was a burden and reminding the elderly woman of the two sons she had lost, one in a bloody battle on foreign soil, and the baby of the family, Oscar, who had come back from the war a broken man and put a pistol to his head just a year later. She wanted to change the subject to some good news, but the truth was, these days, good news was in short supply. So instead, she declared, I'm heading out to the garden to gather some snap beans for dinner. Timothy came skipping into the room. The boy had a Creole cherub face and a smile that could warm a heart. Both his parents had succumbed to addiction and left him to be raised by his grandmother. Even so, the boy still had a zest for life. After I'm done with my chores, can Granny Leona tell me about the time she spoke with my great-granddaddy's ghost? That's what you want to waste your free time on, Nancy grumbled. Go right ahead, but don't be doing a rushed, sloppy job. Goodness knows the dead ain't waiting around to hear you two gossip about them. She then turned and headed out the door with the long, firm strides of a woman who had been strong and healthy her whole life. Rain clouds were gathering and the hogs were grunting noisily for food. Dead is dead, she muttered to herself. But honest goodness, there were some days her heavy heart wished it was something more. End poem.
Great or read
story,
there, Pam.
Thank you.
Yep. Laurent, if we can start with you.
Certainly. Pragmatism and strongly held faith beliefs. Wait a second. Yeah. Pragmatism and strongly held belief, faith. Let me get my tongue in good shape here. Pragmatism and strongly held faith beliefs are the backdrop for the expertly written dialogue that Pam has in this. And it runs the gamut of conversational vernacular to the utterance, dead is dead, she muttered to herself. But honest to goodness, there were some days her heavy heart wished it was something more. After seeing everything that, you know, she went through in the right, and then wishing it was a little bit more than just dead, it gives us the feeling that she would love to be something other than herself. Because, you know, she believes that once you're dead, et cetera, et cetera. She's got tenets of faith that she believes in. She tells the child not to be an idiot, not to be crazy about what he wants to do. But, you know, kids. So at any rate, I thought this is really a brilliant work laid out for the reader in such a fashion as to really read between the lines, if you wish, and take the deeper meanings.
Thank you very much.
Great.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. Great comment, Laurent. Pam, I thought this was a strong storytelling offering. It's always nice to read some prose poetry by you because you do such a great job with it. And it gives us as readers an opportunity to kind of see a slightly different tone and, you know, the attention to detail, the development of the characters. In a relatively short piece, you flesh them out quite skillfully. And I thought the offering that you give us stuck quite strongly with the existential point of view, even though the closing line, you know, yearns for something more, that the character doesn't undergo some kind of transformation. You know, she's going to stick to that way of thinking, even though it's painful for her. You know, her heavy heart wished it was something more. Nevertheless, dead is dead. And so it was really nice, nicely crafted throughout. Very, very well done, Pam.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the inspiration.
Absolutely. Okay, Laurent, where would you like to go next?
Well, I'm going to follow you guys with my own piece called Solitude of Angels. Autumn's constant moon grew large in the dimming twilight. Night was stealing his soul, birthing that magic instant when he soared like an indigo Icarus towards a wilderness of stars just out of reach. Lunar light pushed him outbound, all weight removed by celestial sirens, whose magic fed his need in the manner of a woman driving a man mad with lust, leading to the savagery of his animal flow. He needed the merging solar light, eclipsing conscious thought, a mad hatter spitting evil rhymes, crouched beneath the ribs of a psychedelic mushroom. Genuflection and flight, arrowing into the arms of mad Picassos, enveloped by angular and misplaced body parts, corkscrewing about him in tornadic fury. The aggregate swept up into a melange, a mix of selves from every possible existence. Like pages of a book, each universe pressed tightly against its neighbor, worlds bleeding into worlds, an osmosis of the fantastic, shredding consciousness, bits streaming behind him as he emptied his soul into a black hole of madness, emerging as a single drop, a clouded prism that refracts no light, absorbed like a needle in velvet cloth. Vanishment, like a mantis beheading her mate. Population with the universe has certain rules. Know them well before you seek the solitude of angels. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Laurent. So I read this one and then read it again because I wanted to make sure that I caught it. And it was chock full of meaning and quite surreal as a poem of madness should be, because you, as I did, wrote to the prompt, but his soul was mad, being alone in the wilderness. It had looked within itself, and by heavens, I tell you, it had gone mad. And it's an interesting paradox, because some of the images that you show us are beautiful, enticing, and that is part of it as well. So that solitude of angels is empowered with pain. And I was left uncertain as to whether I would want to follow the Indigo Icarus trailblazer sketched in your poem. It reminded me of that Buddhist saying, they lick honey from a razor's edge. And I truly do believe that that is madness. You know, there's an attraction, even though it's painful. So that was my read on it.
That's a great comment, Rip. Thank you.
Thank you. And Pam, your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. This has this brilliant imagery and metaphors all the way through. And I like how it speaks on madness and that trip down the rabbit hole. And, you know, the part where it says a mix of cells from every possible existence makes me think of the idea of multiple personalities. Amazing word choices. I also really like lunar light pushed him outbound, all weight removed by celestial sirens, whose magic fed his need in the manner of a woman driving a man mad with lust, leading to the savagery of his animal flow. So here is the idea of someone who thinks when they're in the grips of madness with their baser instinct. I also thought it was quite clever with, like, a mantis beheading her mate, copulation with the universe has certain rules. In other words, you don't mess with the natural order of things. Or else, you know, everything's going to fall apart and you're not going to be able to get it back. But just an amazing write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam.
Great comment, Pam. And Laurent, did you want to say anything about the piece?
Well, it wasn't quite what I had in mind when I started to write. I had written quite a bit of another poem, and then I read it and deleted it, because it was really quite poor. And then I started this one, and I just had an idea of, you know, what is madness? It's so damn hard to define madness. You can't just throw a bunch of images together and call it madness. There's going to be a reason behind the madness. And here was a person who just wanted to let his soul loose and fly into the universe and be able to merge with what I call solar light, you know, where he doesn't have to think. But, you know, when you do that kind of thing, you have to beware, as Pam said, of messing with the natural order. You're going to find yourself in trouble. And that was basically the impetus behind the piece.
Mm-hmm. Well, great execution. Really well done. Okay, we are ready for our next one.
I'm sorry. Here I am just thinking about what you said, not doing my job. I just give you 2 seconds.
Okay.
You're going to be the next one. And this is going to be a piece by W.K. Cortis. And when you see it, give it a read, Richard. It's up.
Okay. Oh, yeah, this one's great. So this is by W.K. Cortis. It's called The Ghost of Rod Serling Muses from His Plot, Lakeview Cemetery, Interlaken, New York. We need more Martians. They nattered at me all the time. More monsters. People like to be scared. As if those callow youngsters growing up with 2 cars in the garage, 3 sets at the country club, their fraternity mixers at Whittier or Occidental, knew the first damn thing about terror. Still, they wanted me to grind out the harem scarum hokum. They enjoyed watching 2 reelers on Saturday afternoons while men were doing hard work in Leyte and Manila, as if the transitory fear of some ghoulish boogeyman would last through the 30-second epics featuring some cartoon bear shilling for beer or bunnies extolling the virtues of toilet paper. Let me tell you what fear is, I would say time and again. It's a padlocked fence and a smokestack which isn't churning out a damn thing. It's the jobs you can't get because you said something, and more likely you didn't 20 years ago. It's one more envelope from the bank or the phone company with bold red lettering on the front that you don't open because you know what it says and how it doesn't matter one bit because you can't do a damn thing about it. And these promising young men would just look at me like I was some poorly made-up extraterrestrial from one of their fuck goddamn Rogers pot boilers. Several of my neighbors here were among the men, mostly boys in truth, who marched with the 126th New York, taking fire at Petersburg in the wilderness, at Spotsville in Cold Harbor. We have spoken about the horrors of war, the kaleidoscope of confusion and dread, where no direction leads to shelter, no road guides the way to home. They have said that, as frightening as the sound of the mini-balls zipping overhead like malevolent flies, and the cannon were. What they found truly awful was the manner in which those fields, so like the ones where they had flushed out squirrel and quail as children, became foreboding nightmares containing a dark madness that they never dreamed could have existed. End of poem. And Laurent, if we can start comments off with you, what'd you think?
The first thing that I quoted was, they have said that, as frightening as the sound of the mini-balls zipping overhead like malevolent flies and the carrion were, what they found truly awful was the manner in which those fields, so like the ones where they had flushed out squirrel and quail as children, became foreboding nightmares containing a dark madness that never dreamed could have existed. And that stanza really resonated with me. Because, you know, the stark contrast between fields of peace becoming fields of war were powerful and very well drawn. And then again, let me tell you what fear is. I would say time and again, it's a padlocked fence and a smokestack, which isn't churning out a damn thing. You know, you have to balance, is a balance against the other fear of joblessness and privation for reasons out of his control. The things that we said so long ago that catch up to us nowadays, et cetera. And the in-between of those things is a true madness. I thought it was an epic write.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, your thoughts?
It was a great word to describe this write. And this is a new name to me, so it was really cool to see someone new to me, W.K. Cortes. I was really impressed with this piece, and I look forward to reading more of them. And, I hope they're inspired to write for more of our shows, but that strong imagery and metaphors and opening a title and opening line that really grabs your attention right away. We need more Martians. They nattered at me all the time. More monsters. People like to be scared, as if those callow youngsters growing up with two cars in the garage, three sets at the country club. I like how this speaks. The main message of this is the idea that reality is oftentimes far scarier than any horror created from the imagination. And some people will truly not understand that because they haven't been through the horror of war, the horror of poverty, the horror of dealing with mental illness. And it makes you think about the fact that, mental illness is one of the top three reasons that people end up being homeless, especially when they can't get the help they need to get it under control. So, but powerful lines all the way through, and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. Yeah, so this one was quite skillful. First, he absolutely got me with Serling. So I to this day, consider Rod Serling probably one of the most underrated writers in the history of television, even with this new era of, the binge watch series, which has been a boon to writers of TV. Serling was just a genius. And I know a little bit about his history, and it sure seems like he is calling Serling's ghost for his poem and for his purposes of showing us the horror, specifically the horror of war. But I think also, Conrad's horror, the extermination of the people of the Congo by the Belgians back in the day. And so he hearkens to Serling's personal military service during World War II at the Battle of Leyte in the Philippines, which was a horrific battle. And I like that noir tone. And then hearkening to even the older ghosts in the final paragraph from the Civil War era, the mini balls and the Battle of, I forget which ones, let me look at what Petersburg and the Wilderness, Spotsville, Cold Harbor, all Civil War era battles. So showing us that man's nature doesn't change. And so the horror that is derived from man's nature is unfortunately still with us. And that could be said even today, Russia just bombed Odessa, the Ukrainian port city, and destroyed millions of tons of grain for absolutely no purpose. So we're still living with the horror of war. So a great poem, very well done. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Laurent, for our next one.
All right, the next one is for Pam by Garanway.
All right. Running Away by Garanway. And death, what is death but fear? A two-faced Janus mask disguised, wide-eyed, looking back at what's done, while blank-eyed at what's to come. and lost consciousness of closed eyes, a second sleep of escapes oblivion and blind days of my darkest heart, as a fugitive of my own device on a forked path to the grave, stolen by crumpled passing time, ghosts of me stake out a burial spot. I cling with fingertips to the fear of life. In drunken doubts, I find a hiding place that lets me flee my past. End poem.
Great read there, Pam. Laurent, if we can start with you, what'd you think?
Give me this 1 second here. To find oneself in a living debt, crippled by fear, poisoned by what we drink to enter a kind of aimless oblivion, makes this rite a true standout as far as I'm concerned. I cling with fingertips to the fear of life. In drunken doubts, I find a hiding place that lets me flee my past. No matter where he goes, there he is. And everything that you try to do to escape your past or escape who you are, you find is impossible. It really, really can't be done. Stand out in the light, stand out in the open, face the demons. Easier said than done. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And that, by the way, was that poem was inspired by prompt 5. After all, one does not die of it. Die of what? I asked swiftly, of being afraid. And interestingly enough, that prompt was from Lord Jim. So it's a very different feel, a different different story that Conrad's telling in Lord Jim. So I really liked where Granwy went with this one. Skillful, philosophical brevity, emotive, full of angst and the crutches that we use to dull the pain. And in this case, alcohol. So, great job. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word on the piece.
Well, this has wonderful imagery and metaphors. I really thought it was an excellent write on the idea that we die before our physical death when we allow fear to control us, and how we try to forget the past and we're so focused, but we're so focused on the past, we can't see what's ahead of us. And strong lines all the way through. But I especially like, as a fugitive of my own device and a forked path to the grave, stolen by crumpled passing time. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Laurent, we are ready for our next one.
All right, the next piece in line is Gary Gibson. My turn to read The Future of Lost Hope. Shot through the heart, Peace felt the catamount claws tear deeply through massive muscle, mighty, sharp. A puerile sin of brothelous, musky loam. Sunset Saturdays cast shadows long over impressionist flowers, crumbling brick opulence. Gambling cabal fields of death, profits of land acquisition, burgeoning Belgian brews, translating fine fork semblance waves, an idiot on the heights, only wind of artful crashed fillery, pushed to the bone piles, rushed for he'd ready, tyrannosaur mechs of AI war, crawling indexes, deploying mimes, names, names of redacted rhymes, fine buildings of banked workery. Jerking, left the ground kissed. Vomit, erupted. Guts, revolting masses, passed. So green, so grown, green. End poem.
Nicely done there, Laurent. I thought this was a surreal journey through Conrad's Heart of Darkness. I felt it had vivid imagery. The imagery was quite emotive and very compelling. Really nicely done. Pam, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was quite brilliant with wonderful wordplay, amazing imagery and metaphors. I really like how it speaks to me on the idea of a society falling apart. And there was a lot of great lines in this, but I have to say that I thought the wordplay especially came through as clever in Tyrannosaur mechs of AI war, crawling indexes, deploying mines, names of redacted nines, fine building of bank torquery, and just great use of some really brutal and almost ugly imagery with the idea of the pareil sin of brothels, musky loam, and the shirking left, the ground-kissed vomit, erupted gut. You can just see that ugliness that comes when a society emotionally and physically falls apart. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Pam. And Laurent, I will give you final word on this piece.
Yeah, but there was a somberness and descriptive imagery to the poem that resembles the war in Ukraine. Another Heart of Darkness in real time. There were a number of lines in this piece that kind of reminded me of that. Tyrannosaur mechs of AI war, crawling indexes, deploying mimes, names, names of redacted nines, fine buildings of bank twerkery. The crawling indexes, deploying mimes, I struggled with that line for a little bit. Is it the index of people killed? Are we sending out people who stand in for other people, miming them, as it were? Are we redacting the names of people who are killed? And when I read that, I thought of Russia releasing casualty figures for themselves, and I think they said there've been around 5,500 Russians killed in the war as soldiers, and the estimates are that all they did is take the original number and take 10% of it and admit to that 10%. So you know they are redacting history, as it were, so to speak. I thought it was a great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Very, very insightful. I hadn't caught that relationship between the redacting. But absolutely. Okay. And with that, we are ready for our next one.
Well, we're going to have a pleasure of hearing Thomas B's Out of Control, read by Richard.
Okay. All right, so this is Thomas B., Out of Control. Life sneaks up on you, no matter how much you think you plan for it. Sometimes all your fears are born in confusion about what is expected. Expectations limit vision. I walked into the wilderness, found it was more relaxing than going downtown. Nature, in all her boundless adaptations, somehow is not as threatening as a traffic jam. And all the planning for excellence and egalitarian providence, it all seems to work out. What is comfortable for someone else scratches like a wool blanket, makes you look like your pants are preparing for a flood. And what everybody thinks is going to be just perfect, in actuality, to be blunt, sucks. We pull all the weeds, cut down all the trees, then replant, garden, bring the flowers fresh cut into the house where the green plants are better at clearing the air than all our filters, so desperate to be part of a natural world that all our state parks are booked for the next 2 years. Went to college, learn to demonstrate my natural astuteness, fashion arguments based on an overly analytical hypotheses, allowing me to sound wonderful while being meaningless. I got old in spite of all the doctors promising catastrophe, mostly because I learned to use laughter to confront anxiety, recognizing my fears were my inability to acknowledge I am not in control, and finally found freedom when I recognized that everyone's feelings and judgments were not to be taken personally. I can only live my life. Not to worry. I know. I put it down somewhere. End of poem. And Pam, if we can start with you.
Yes, a great read there, Richard. And as always, an amazing write by Tom. I really thought this was a great take on the chosen prompts. And I like that he was inspired by more than one and wove them together seamlessly. Thought-provoking and heartfelt lines that spoke to me on the idea of our need to connect with nature and the unfortunate events that oftentimes we destroy that nature that we want to connect with. And also the idea of meaningless words used for showmanship and little else. And I really like this all the way through, but especially we pull the weeds, cut down all the trees, and we plant, garden, bring the flowers fresh cut into the house, where green plants are better at cleaning the air than all of our filters. And I also like, I got old in spite of all the doctors promising catastrophe, mostly because I learned to use laughter to confront anxiety, recognize my fears were my inability to acknowledge I am not in control. And that is so true. Oftentimes we feel like we have control over everything, and sometimes we just have to learn to let go of that idea and realize that life doesn't always go as expected. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Great, great comment there, Pam. Laurent, your thoughts?
It always seems to work out. What is comfortable to someone else scratches like a wool blanket, makes you look like your pants are preparing for a flood. And what everybody thinks is going to be just perfect, in actuality, to be blunt, sucks. I enjoyed this piece that blends fear and loneliness so expertly. Love the tone and the quoted stanza. It's a little note of dark humor, perhaps. And it struck all the right notes in response to all the prompts. And he used a number of them. That was a damn fine write. And Thomas added to that, in one way we are alone, locked in our bodies, experiencing our own unique vision, how we share and step past our history and verites to recognize common ground. Speaks loudly to how much we want to create a better universe, or in this case, just a better world. We can shape the universe later on.
Great comment there, Laurent. Yeah, I too thought he did a wonderful job in that kind of undercurrent of sarcasm, cynical humor. Pam picked out the same passage that I liked, but that second part I'll read. I am not in control and finally found freedom when I recognized that everyone's feelings and judgments were not to be taken personally. I can only live my life. And, Kierkegaard says that life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forward. And that has certainly been my experience. What that line, everyone's feelings and judgments were not to be taken personally. If only I had known that when I was young, I would have suffered so much less. So I thought it was incredibly insightful, highly philosophical, spiritual, imminently practical gaze into the truth of navigating through the various bends in life's river. And as I said, I found that same truth. So sometimes I still struggle with it in the moment. excellent right there. And Laurent, where would you like to go next?
Well, Pam is going to read us Fearful by Weaver of Dreams.
Oh, doesn't she have that a one? Sound?
Nope, she does. So Weaver of Dreams. Let me pull up the SoundCloud. I must be slipping here because I thought I wrote in the notes that it had a SoundCloud. But at any rate, here it goes.
Oh, it does, and I missed it.
Fear
Sorry.
Is insidious, silent, and deadly, building within to terror and pain. At first you ignore the putrid smell that lingers and taints each minute. Then it's joined by the feeling that you're being closely watched by eyes dark with hate, overflowing with evil. Heartbeats quicken, limbs weaken. Fight or flight cannot be contained. Might that save you from the evil pits of hell, where caverns wait for man or maid? As months pass, the fear does not abate. Your peripheral vision catches glimpses of grotesquely shaped figures, grinning madly, as if they know what happens next.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Weaver. Okay. And Laurent, if we can start comments up with you, what'd you think?
Fear is insidious, silent and deadly, building within to terror and pain. The reason for the fear in this poem is well drawn. It's a dark fantasy of fear personified in one of its innumerable guises. I thought it was a really good piece by Katie. It's not overly long, but it's not a three-line brevity either. She balances the darkness that we feel and the light that we aspire to. That was an excellent piece.
Absolutely. Great comment there. And yeah, and just so everyone knows, the inspiration for this was Prompt 5. And after all, one does not die of it. Die of what? I asked swiftly, of being afraid. And I loved where she went with that. As opposed to some kind of FDR, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself poem, which is, I think, like the natural way to go with that kind of a prompt. She turned it on its head and showed us that fear actually serves a purpose in man's evolution and always have. And it's namely to warn us of danger. And the dangers in Weaver's poem are evil, torture, and hell itself. I thought this was a deliciously dark poem. Loved where she went with it. And Pam, I am going to give you final word on this one. What'd you think?
Oh, this is a wonderful dark write, a great read by Weaver. I really like how it speaks on the fight or flight response. And the idea of how the mind and body have that automatic reaction to fear. I also like how visceral she got. And at first you ignore the putrid smell that lingers and taints each minute. But, you know, you have to learn to trust your instincts. You know, when a circumstance doesn't feel right, you need to react. So just an amazing dark write and very well done.
Excellent comment, Pam. Okay, Laurent, I think we definitely have time for at least one more. Where would you like to go?
Well, I'm going to try with Pam again. Sorry I missed that SoundCloud the first time. Pam, this is going to be a poem by Jody Melton.
All right. Fear's False Grip by Jody Melton. Lurking in the shadows where darkness reigns, a tale of fear, its grip remains within the heart, where doubts collide, a paradox that life can't hide. For fear itself, a specter of cold, its icy touch, the spirit's hold, yet mortal flesh, though frail it seems, defies the grasp of fear's extremes. In whispers deep, its venom spreads. Embrace my shroud, the darkness said. But heed this truth I hold so near. You can't die from me. Have no fear. And so it's true, fear wields no knife. It cannot take one's precious life. But in its change, you'll find a space where dreams decay and hopes erase. For if you dwell in fear's domain, your days are lost, your heart in pain. In constant flight, you cease to live the very essence you must give. A life constrained by haunting fright is but a shadow, endless night. To soar the skies, you must be free. From fear's embrace, find liberty. So let us face our deepest dread. With courage bold, let's forge ahead. In unity, our strength shall swell and banish fear's eternal spell. For life's true worth, we must uphold. In love, in joy, keep our spirits bold. No longer bound, we shall be clear to live with purpose without fear. End poem.
Great read, Pam. So, yeah, it's always nice when we have some synchronicity or serendipity taking place in the show, the way the poems line up. So this was the take on the prompt that I was kind of expecting to see. It is inspirational, showing us to face fears, and quite beautiful, lyrical, inspirational message poem, nice riffing off the chosen prompt, and a great counterpoint to Weaver's take on the very same prompt. So always fun when these things kind of play out that way just through happenstance. Great poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I like the lines, for if you dwell in fear's domain, your days are lost, your heart in pain, in constant flight, you cease to live. The very essence you must give. The poet goes on to say that a life constrained by haunting fright is but a shadow, endless night. To soar the skies, you must be free. In fear's embrace, find liberty. One of the toughest things we have to do in life is face our fears. Those things that we shy away from for decades or longer, and then one day we finally have to face them. And, you know, usually when you face them, you conquer them, and life becomes a lot easier. The light shines a little bit brighter because you no longer dwell in fear. I thought it was a well-realized piece on the subject.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Pam, as reader, I'll give you final word on this one.
Yeah, this does have a wonderful lyrical quality to it. And I like how it personifies death, especially in the lines, in whispers deep, its venom spreads, embrace my shroud, the darkness said. I like how it does have, in the end, a positive message on the idea that we can find freedom from fear, you know, especially when we're willing to face it and willing to tell fear that it has no control over our lives. You know, just amazing lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments. All right. Do we have a brevity or what do you think? Maybe just...
We have enough time for this particular piece, Richard. I'm going to ask you to close out the reading with a poem by Blue Raven.
Okay. Perfect. Okay, so this is called Amazon by Blue Raven. I've imagined myself a robed stranger in white on the banks of that dark river, searching for answers in tongues of flame that dance on the fevered water, cleansing and forgiving, promising bliss. Answers flicker there, mirages that are swallowed up in the mystery of shadows, diminished by ordinary words that break the spell of what can only be unspoken. But in undeciphered flickers on the rivers of strangers, we often feel the breath of whatever may be sacred, in unknown languages that sound like babble in my ears, a melodious accompaniment to the silent voice of God. End of poem. And Pam, I'll give you first word on this one.
Oh, this is brilliant. I love the one-word title, Amazon, and wonderful imagery and metaphors, an excellent write on searching for answers, beautiful and spiritual. And I like how it speaks on the idea that we can find the sacred within nature and within the human voice. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
The first lines in this, I've imagined myself a robed stranger in white on the banks of that dark river, searching for answers in tongues of flames that dance on the fevered water, cleansing and forgiving, promising bliss. A robed stranger in white. White is a color of purity. So is he there as a member of a wiser level of being, so to speak? Does he stand in for God or something different? When you are on the river of strangers, as the poet says, we often feel the breath of whatever may be sacred. You know, there are places that are sacred to all people and to tribes in the Amazon as well. And we wonder sometimes, do they have the answers? Can we find the answers? Can we touch what they touch daily and feel? And, of course, the answer is kind of up in the air. But if you take my meaning, there are answers to be found almost anywhere we look. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. That's how I read it, too, by the way, the robed stranger in white. As an angelic figure, being contrast to the dark river. And I, too, really love this piece. In unknown languages, that sound that babble in my ears, melodious accompaniment to the silent voice of God. I love how she shows the union with divinity through the metaphorical Amazon River. I thought it was uplifting, transformational, a poetic finger pointing at that which transcends and simultaneously dwells within. Great job. And with that, we have come to the close of another episode, another show. And great job. Thanks so much, Pam, for joining us here on the air. Thanks to everyone that was typing in on the group chat. And special thanks to Laurent. I really appreciate you coming back. You were missed. It's wonderful having you back. That old chemistry kind of comes back, and it's just a pleasurable thing. Yeah, you know, just that love of literature comes shining right through.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to thank Fill My Eyes for everything she does in the background, making these shows happen. And final thanks, as always, goes to our poets, the people that write for these shows. Without you guys, there is no show, and we truly do appreciate your efforts. Pam, I think there's around 30 seconds if you want to tell us what's going on in 30 minutes.
Yes, in 30 minutes you can join us for Break On Through, where we'll have some carryovers, and our main rites will be poetry inspired by the art of Carol Nelson.
Awesome. So please do stick around for that if you can. And we will see you in 2 weeks. Laurent and I will do a little bit of chatting and figure out what we want to do from here. What's going to be our next show? Join us in 2 weeks. Thanks so much, Laurent. Have a good night.
My pleasure. Good night, all.